be encouraged, young man, to go forth. I am proud to know you, young black man, and what you're doing, and we'll continue to pray for you and support you.
And if you have a specific, if you have a specific event that you would like to advertise, please don't hesitate to contact us, and we'll meet again here on KBOO, okay?
I promise you. Thank you so much.
Okay, great. Thanks, and now it is the witching hour, and I want to say holla.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Está sintonizando la radio de KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You are listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we are talking with Howie Hawkins, the Green Party candidate for president. And I should note right off that in compliance with FCC equal access laws, the candidates that are on the ballot in Oregon for president will also be invited on the show, including the Republican and Democratic candidates. But tonight we're gonna start off with Howie Hawkins. Howie, welcome to KBOO.
Well, thank you, it's good to be here.
As you may have heard in the last month or so, Portland has really been in the news. We've been in the news because the president decided to send down federal troops to Portland to protect the federal building, where people in support of the Black Lives Matter movement have been protesting for the last 2 months or so, the deaths of George Floyd and you know, so many other people of color who have been murdered. Where are you on this issue of the police use of force?
Well, it's kind of a personal issue because we had a young man from the neighborhood I live in named Johnny Gamage, who was suffocated to death by suburban Pittsburgh police when he was visiting his cousin, Ray Seals, from this neighborhood, who was playing defensive tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers. This was in 1995. And it was a routine traffic stop, and Johnny Gamage was suffocated to death by these police, who were never convicted of any crime and in fact were promoted after the incident. This was the Eric Garner or the George Floyd of the 90s, and he's right here from Syracuse. So one thing that we've been calling for since then is a Johnny Gamage law, which would require the Department of Justice to investigate and prosecute if warranted every time the civil rights of a person are violated by the police, including bodily injury and death. And when we do our Black Lives Matter demonstrations in Syracuse, we always bring up Johnny Gamage. He's one of those names that seems to have been lost, but you know, for us here, it's personal. One of our Green Party leaders is a leader in Black Lives Matter, who is Rozzie Seals, who is also a cousin of Johnny Gamage, the sister of Ray Seals. So this has been with us now for 25 years. And it goes back earlier because Syracuse, where I live in New York, has a police department that is 90%, over 90% white in a city that's half people of color. Over 90% of them live out in the suburbs or the rural areas. They're really like an occupying force. And you've heard a lot about stop and frisk, and New York supposedly stopped it, New York City, but I'm telling you, they stop people, black people particularly, just because they're driving while black, and they, you know, stop the people, search the cars. And a lot of times we know the police do this, they do it toward the end of their shift so they can automatically get overtime by, you know, going through the processing of these people who are arrested for resisting arrest or disorderly conduct in the course of those searches. It's very abusive, and it really exploits the city. And so you know, we have a movement here trying to change the use of force policy and things like that. But what I've been calling for, and the Black Lives Matter movement here has been calling for, is community control of the police, because they get away with these murders and other crimes because they police themselves and they protect themselves. And we got to have an independent police commission that can hire and fire the police chief, set the policies, set the budget, and investigate and discipline independently of the internal affairs of the police department. To us, that's the game changer, because as long as the police themselves, they're going to keep committing these crimes.
As a candidate for president, what will you do? What positions do you support to address the racist criminal justice system? What kind of reforms would you support, and what moves are you pushing for as a candidate?
Well, with respect to community control, that's something you have to do at the local level, but the Department of Justice could provide guidelines and financial incentives to encourage that. And I have on my website a 8,000-word article on community control of the police, an idea whose time came, and I think the subtitle is Idea Who Came and Still Exists, because I came up in the San Francisco Bay Area when the Black Panther Party had a referendum in Berkeley on community control. So this is something that I've known about for, you know, 50 years now. And so that's one thing. There's a lot of talk about defunding the police and redirecting a lot of those resources in police departments to social services that would deal with the problems we send the police in to deal with. They're not equipped to deal with, like a homeless person. They don't need a vagrancy charge or harassment. They need a home. And a drug addict doesn't need a criminal charge for possession of drugs. They need medical treatment. And somebody in a mental health episode doesn't need a cop with a sidearm who doesn't know how to deal with that. They need some mental health experts. So a lot of what the police do is really not what police should be doing. So the problem is there's not enough money in the police departments to provide the scale of resources needed in these communities to deal with generations of segregation, discrimination, and exploitation. So we're calling for defunding the military as well and redirecting a lot of those resources into a Marshall Plan to rebuild our cities. Put the money into jobs and housing and businesses and schools and healthcare, so that the best way to fight crime is to fight poverty. And so that is another thing that we're emphasizing, and we can do at the federal level.
Right now, COVID-19 is rampaging this country, and one of the places where it is spreading the worst is within the prison system. What would you support for, what plans would you support for dealing with the issue of COVID-19 in our prison systems?
Well, a lot of these people should be released so they're not sitting ducks for COVID. A lot of people in the jails are awaiting trial because they can't make bail. They haven't even been convicted. They can be released unless there's, you know, reason to believe they commit a violent crime. Most people in prison are there for nonviolent offenses. Most of those offenses are drug offenses. 45% of federal prisoners are in there for drug offenses. They can be released. We have whistleblowers and political prisoners that should be released immediately. Reality Winner, disclosed an intelligence summary, a half-page summary of what the Russians might have done, according to the NSA, in the 2016 election. And the Trump administration threw the book at her. She's 5 years in prison, 3 years probation. Very severe sentence for what she did. And now she has COVID-19. People like her should have been released. Mumia Abu-Jamal and Leonard Peltier, been in for decades. They're old men now. They're not a threat to society. And there are a lot of old Black Panthers, same thing. They should be released just on humanitarian grounds even before COVID-19. So there's a lot of people. I heard the DA of Philadelphia, Larry Krasner, say that he thought about 75% of the prisoners could be released without threatening public safety, but promoting public health so this virus doesn't spread in the prisons. And then we have all these people who are detained for trying to immigrate or seek asylum in the United States. And they're in these detention camps, and COVID is ravaging those camps. Those people should be released. The children and their parents should be reunited, and the government should provide help for them so they can settle. Housing, particularly for the unaccompanied minors, and social services and job placement while they wait to go through the process. And same goes for the people on the Mexican side of the border who unlawfully are kept out from applying for asylum or immigration. And they're facing the same problem. So, you know, it's a public health issue. You know, these people should be released. And then, you know, we're all kind of prisoners of Donald Trump's, basically he gave up on COVID. You know, COVID won, he's a loser, and he wants to talk about other things. So now Americans can't go hardly anywhere in the world because we're too damn contagious. We have 4% of the world's population and between 25 and 30% of the infections, and it's exploding right now. It's a total failure, you know. And then, you know, I wonder, well, where the hell is Biden? Because, you know, he's the presumptive Democratic nominee. He lives within commuter distance of the White House press corps. He could convene them for news conferences and, you know, hammer away that we need a test, contact trace, and quarantine program to suppress the virus like every other organized society has done. So what we really have is two governing parties presiding over a failed state. And I've never seen anything like this. I mean, I have my criticisms of both parties, but this is just a total disaster.
Well, if either of them come on Prison Pipeline, we will have a chance to ask them those same questions. Recently, the Trump administration resumed the administration of the federal death penalty. And in July, two prisoners who were on death row were murdered by the state. What is your position on the death penalty?
Should be abolished. You know, if I was president, I would push Congress to enact a law. The Supreme Court, we can't count on them. They've had moratoriums, but that has been lifted. The death penalty is barbaric. And we have too many incidents, particularly now because of DNA, that can, you know, exonerate people from convictions and death penalties that they were given. So we don't know how many people, innocent people, we have murdered through the state. So death penalty should be abolished.
With the tide of public sympathy turning, there is not discussion commensurate with defunding the police, with, you know, clearing out the jails. How would a Green New Deal, which I know is something that you support, deal with issues of people who have been incarcerated in prisons, with future prisons? What are your policies? What policies do you have that could like help to turn this tide?
Well, as part of the Green New Deal, we have an economic bill of rights that would guarantee, the government would guarantee to everybody a job guarantee. Everybody willing and able to work that can't find a living wage job in the private sector would be able to go to an employment office and be employed in social services or public works. In other words, infrastructure. It would have a guaranteed income above poverty built into the tax structure so that if your income is below the poverty line, the government would send you money to bring you up above the poverty line. Martin Luther King used to say that the quickest way to end poverty is to give poor people money. That's why they're poor. And then Medicare for all, so everybody has access to health care. We have a plan in there to build 25 million units of public housing over a decade. It's a $2.5 trillion program to ensure that everybody has access to affordable housing. We would provide tuition-free public education from childcare and pre-K through post-secondary, college, university, trade school, and continuing adult education. And then for the seniors, we would double Social Security benefits so everybody has a secure retirement above the poverty line. So for people coming out of prison, they could get a job, their income would be above the poverty line, and as this housing is built, they'd have access to affordable housing. So that's one thing to provide the economic footing. We also need, and this could be a federal policy, an end to discrimination based on source of income. Because you know, if people are coming out of prison and, you know, maybe they don't have job skills, they're getting a job training, not a job, their income might be from an income support program like this guaranteed income. And right now landlords can say, well, if you're getting your money from, you know, welfare or Social Security or Section 8, we don't have to accept you. And, you know, that undermines the whole idea of Section 8, which was supposedly, instead of building public housing, we'll give people vouchers and they can live wherever they want. Well, they can't. Because of this discrimination, they tend to be forced back into the impoverished neighborhoods where the landlords do take the Section 8. So there's a lot of things we can do there to support the formerly incarcerated, but also everybody who's struggling, which, you know, look at where we're at right now. There's up to 28 million people facing eviction by November because of this COVID crisis. The rent moratorium is ending and federally funded, and some of the states have moratoriums that are ending now. So the landlords have already started eviction proceedings. We could have the biggest homeless crisis in the history of this country in the next couple months. So there's just a, you know, and we got, what, 40 million people receiving unemployment benefits. The $600 bonus expires this week. I mean, we're in a world of trouble. So, you know, these are things that when we talk about the Green New Deal, it's both a climate action program, but given where we are in the economy now, it's an economic recovery program.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. We're talking with Howie Hawkins, who is the Green Party candidate for president. In compliance with FCC equal access laws, all candidates who are on the ballot in Oregon will be invited to be on the show. I'd like to talk about the issue of felony disenfranchisement for a minute. That's an issue which can be addressed at the federal level. As you know, when many people come out of prison, they are denied the right to vote, which, you know, greatly affects the exercise of democracy in our country. What would you do to address the issue of felony disenfranchisement?
Well, we should have federal law saying that you cannot lose your right to vote because you are in prison or you're convicted of a felony. Vermont and Maine allow convicted felons while they're in prison to vote. A lot of states allow people who have felonies to resume their voting rights after they finish their imprisonment or their parole. But I would say that enabling people who are in prison for felonies to participate in civic affairs is part of the rehabilitation process, connecting them with society instead of further alienating them. And with so many people incarcerated, we're basically disenfranchising a whole slew of people. I think people should not lose their voting rights. And there are other things we need to do at the federal level to enfranchise people. There's all these voter suppression tactics that Republicans are known for, like purging voter rolls and not putting enough polling places, particularly in Black communities, to suppress what's likely to be a Democratic vote, and to have ridiculous photo ID requirements. You know, in Texas, if you have a student ID, that's not good enough. But if you have a gun permit, you can vote. So, you know, that's, you know, who that's aimed at. So we need standards like that federally. We need fair ballot access, because party suppression is a form of voter suppression. And this is what the Democrats do.
In the 1990s, the United States began cutting federal prison education programs. Many of these had been funded through Pell Grants and through various public subsidies. Access to education, I've found in all my years of interviewing people who have been incarcerated, who have come out of prison, they've all said the same thing. They've said access to education while they're in prison was one of the keys to their success post-incarceration. Unfortunately, there are almost no federal programs left. And the only thing that most people who are incarcerated have to look to for educational opportunities is meager programs provided by private charities. What would you do to support and reinvigorate education within the prison system, access to education, if you were elected president?
what we call for tuition-free public education. In this case, a lot of the incarcerated may need their high school diploma as well as the opportunity to take post-secondary courses. And that should be provided like it is to everybody on the outside under this program. And you're right, that's how people get connected back to society. And, you know, I know a lot of young people in my neighborhood who are in these gangs, and a lot of them are so poorly educated, they don't really know what they're dealing with in the wider world. I mean, to them, the government is the police, the courts, and the prisons. And they don't even know what a mayor and a city council is. And because of very difficult circumstances, they might not have been in school since middle school. They've been out. They get in prison and they get an opportunity to like get an education and actually get oriented to the world they were trying to navigate through these gangs. So I think it's essential, you know, for public safety reasons. So the people come out and they have a better idea how to navigate the world that they are in. And it's just a way of, it's gotta be part of the rehabilitation process. I mean, right now, instead of justice and restorative justice, in other words, making things better so we can go forward in a better place, we have a punitive system based on revenge. And that just makes the criminal problems worse. And it makes the situation worse for the people who have been convicted and are in prison. We're not giving them a chance to come back out and find a way to integrate into society in a productive way.
The movement for Black Lives reminds us that systemic racism is at the root of so many of our social and economic injustices, which unfortunately translate into mass incarceration. What will you do and what will the Green Party do to address the issue of systemic racism in the United States and the historical injustices which have been created as a result of this ignorance and this perpetuation of white privilege?
Well, I don't want to wait for white people to reform themselves. I think the best answer to white supremacy and systemic racism is Black power in Black communities, brown power in brown communities. I mean, the Black Panther Party used to go through the whole rainbow saying people should have power in their communities. And what that means is racists, who are the gatekeepers for education, employment, housing in the criminal justice system, should not be in a position of discriminating, which means you've got to empower these communities. And one thing we want to do in the Green New Deal, as we build Green New Deal factories so we have clean production system using clean power and minimizing waste, heading towards zero waste, is to provide the funding for this and bypass the governors and mayors who have perpetuated the misallocation of resources so these impoverished communities don't get their fair share. Or those who get them for those communities are really, middle-class administrators and they get nice salaries, but the community doesn't get real resources. So we've got to find a way to put this money in these communities under community control so that they have the power and they're not going to discriminate against themselves. And I think that's what we got to deal with. Now, you know, we want to educate people so they understand why racism is stupid and wrong morally and scientifically. But these attitudes are ingrained. So, you know, I think that's part of the program, but we can't wait for the white people to stop being racist and discriminating. We got to empower the racially oppressed communities.
How would you deal with, what would you support in terms of alternatives to sending people to these municipal jails? Would you support closing down municipal jails, such as San Francisco has proposed doing in 2019, I believe they made the movement to close the city jail?
Well, we have to recognize that over 80% of what the police do is harass people, particularly in low-income and Black communities, for low-level offenses or even non-criminal behavior. Only 5% of what they do deals with violent crime and a little over 12% with felony property crime. And even then, they only clear those cases, the violent crimes and the serious felony crimes, with arrests 25% of the time. And 60% of victims of those crimes don't even report them because they don't trust the police. If you're the witness to a crime or the victim to a crime and you call the police and you're in a black community and a black person, you're afraid of the police because you were there at the crime. They might arrest you and you were the victim. So don't even call the police. The police can't even do what we think they're supposed to do. They don't do it well. And most of what they do is basically keep downscale people down, particularly black people, and out of the upscale communities. That's what they were set up to do, mainly by Democrats in cities, because behind the Democratic politicians are the landlords, the developers, the whole real estate industry that profits from racial segregation. And they don't want to provide affordable housing, they want to provide upscale housing, but they go in and they'll, you know, scare a white neighborhood because the black people are coming, so the white people sell the house low, and the black people move in, they buy the house high, and then the white people move out to the suburbs and buy it high in a, you know, a suburban house. So the real estate industry makes money off this racism. And behind, they are behind the politicians who set up the police to police this system so that the school district and municipal lines are like the new Jim Crow lines. And so, you know, that's the system we got to change. Most of what the police do should be addressed by different social services, like I was talking about before. And to the extent that the police, we need, you know, the police to catch people who do commit violent crimes or serious property crimes. They need to improve that, and they need the trust of the community, so the community will help them solve those crimes, because that's how you find out. We need, you know, people who know how to investigate and do forensics. You know, we need somebody to do that, but the way the police departments are now, that's not what they do. They focus mostly on harassing particularly low-income and minority people for stuff that often isn't even criminal. Well, going back to the systemic racism, I think we need to have a reparations program for African Americans. There's a bill in Congress, been there since 79, that would set up a commission to study and develop reparations proposals. And, you know, the usual first response to that is, well, I have nothing to do with slavery. Well, how about the fact that Black America lost half its wealth after the Great Recession, just a decade ago, because of predatory lending and foreclosures and computerized fraud called robo-signing that stole people's homes? You know, how about reparations for that? So there's a real need there, and that's the kind of investment that we can put in, into communities to uplift them, and it's long overdue. So I think that's part of, you know, dealing with systemic racism and the problems in our racially oppressed communities.
Thank you. We've been talking tonight with Howie Hawkins. Howie Hawkins is the Green Party candidate for president here in the United States. And we will invite all candidates who are on the ballot for president in Oregon to be on Prison Pipeline. Howie, if people would like to find out more about you or your campaign, where can they go?
HowieHawkins.us is the website. And from there, you can find the other social media. You can find out our position papers, news about us. You can volunteer. You can donate. Everything's on that webpage, HowieHawkins.us.
Thank you so much for being on Prison Pipeline.
Well, thanks for having me.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
You're listening to Community Radio
KBOO Portland.